Welcome to the Monster Club.
An honest look at horror movies from lifelong horror fans.
Fair warning, you may not have seen this movie. We have... Spoilers Ho! I'm Jethel.
And I'm Tark.
This week, we delved into the deep, dark recesses of the human soul as we watched Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt in... Seven. Now, you didn't see this movie before I recommended it.
Nope. I mean, I had read a little bit about it, you know, seeing it mentioned, but I had never just sat down and watched the thing. Mm. Mostly I knew that there was a something in a box at the end of the movie.
Well, everyone knows what's in the box.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that.
That's an iconic scene, even if you've never seen the movie. You can't escape from knowing about that scene.
That's right. So, what did you think, as a newbie to this movie, what did you think of Seven?
Well, first I want to give my alt title. I came up with a good one.
Oh, you came up with an alternative title. Go for it.
My alt title for Seven is, It Only Rains in the City.
You're right. It didn't rain when they were in the desert, did it?
I mean, it rains nonstop for a solid week in the city, and as soon as they drive like a few miles out of town, bone dry.
Uh-huh.
Dust on the road. Not a puddle in sight.
Nothing.
Oh, boy. I read that they made it rain so much because it happened to really be raining during Brad Pitt's initial scenes.
Oh, is that it?
And he was in a rush to get everything filmed, or they were in a rush to get everything for him filmed, so he could go off and do 12 Monkeys.
Ah.
And they just kept it going. They just kept it going and just made it rain in every single scene. And then, you know, it would be stupid to try to make it rain out there, out in the open in the desert with the power lines and whatnot. So I found that funny, but wow, this movie is right up there with like Silence of the Lambs as far as works of art. This movie is fantastic. I love everything about it.
And you hit the nail on the head there. Seven is a work of art.
It is. I love the darkness of it. It's kind of got that noir kind of feel to it without being black and white.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know? I love that they didn't try to interject a bunch of comedy into it to make it a buddy cop movie. You know, it's just dark, gritty, and...
Yes, this is a very dark, serious crime drama.
And literally, as well as thematically, they actually used something called bleach bypass when they developed the film so that the silver wasn't leached out of the celluloid when they were developing the film. And this made everything... you know, project on the screen much darker than it would have otherwise. I don't know exactly what that entails, but they went to great lengths to make this look a very particular way.
Awesome. So the synopsis: grizzled old veteran who he's had enough.
Yeah, Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman's character has had enough. It's time to move on, time to retire, but he's going to train his replacement, played by Brad Pitt, when a serial killer case comes up and Morgan finds that he can't leave Brad alone with this particular case.
Yeah, both he and the police captain have serious doubts as to whether David Mills... played by Brad Pitt, can handle something this serious.
Because Mills comes from... Well, does it say where he transferred from? It was a small town type of situation.
Yeah, they make that clear, that he is not from a big city. And they don't even label what big city this is. It's kind of ambiguous.
I believe it's supposed to be either Detroit or Chicago.
And yet, when they're sitting down in the diner, there's a poster somewhere in the back that said something about New York City pizza.
Really?
Yeah. So it's left very ambiguous. Very ambiguous. They never nail it down. The badge that Freeman flashes at one point just says Metropolitan on it. It doesn't actually say a city. I kind of like that. Kind of like that. Because the location really isn't that important.
Right.
The story, it doesn't mean anything.
So we have crimes being committed in, inspired by the seven deadly sins. And we're not talking about the anime here. We're talking about the biblical seven deadly sins. First one we come across is gluttony.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that was a...
Do you think that was
gross.
A real guy? That man was huge.
Half and half. There was a real guy with a bunch of prosthetics, and then when they have him stitched up on the
medical examiner's table.
Yeah, thank you. That when they have him, laid out after the autopsy, that's not a person. That's it's like a fiberglass thing, and I think. I want to say that's right. But yeah, it was a real person because they had to lift him up, lift his face up out of the spaghetti during that scene. They used actual real-life cockroaches in that scene. And
that
doesn't
surprise me.
The Wrangler used Vaseline in various strategic places to make sure the cockroaches didn't wander off set. But they were just left to wander all over the set, except, they couldn't get past this Vaseline laid out. And the actor who was in the prosthesis, I can't remember his name now, but in the fat suit, the cockroaches were allowed to crawl all over him, and he had to have stuff, stuffed into his nostrils and his ears to keep the cockroaches out. But those cockroaches, it didn't stop them from crawling into his underwear. Falling up into his underwear.
Oh man!
I bet you he got paid big money. The director felt so bad for the guy who had to be in that fat suit that he decided to make it up for him a little bit. And the prosthesis featured well endowed dangly bits. Let's say.
We're going to put you through hell, but you're going to be well hung.
Yeah, so on the examining room table, you can see he's
okay,
well endowed. Yeah.
All right. The most shocking scene in this entire movie is not actually the ending, I think. I'm not talking about the most depressing or whatever, but the most shocking scene is Sloth.
Yes. Yes, that was a good one. So good.
Again, we're doing spoilers here.
Yeah, yeah. If you haven't seen the movie.
Police get a tip to where the Seven Deadly Sins killer might be, and they go to this apartment building, and you start seeing just car air fresheners, the little trees just hanging all over the ceiling to mask smell and stuff like that. And they burst into this bedroom, and this dude is bound to the bed, and there's no way this dude is alive.
Yeah.
He's just emaciated, definitely looks dead to everybody. Cops examining, and he goes in, and he's like, "You got what you deserve." Ah! The guy wakes up! He wakes up!
Because originally, it wasn't a tip, it was... what was it? They were interviewing the lawyer's wife from the greed one, right? And they were saying, "Does anything look out of place?" And she said, "Well, this painting and this picture on the wall."
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and then they found, "Help Me" done in fingerprints on the wall behind the painting that was upside down, and then they tracked back to Victor's place, and Victor is the guy that's strapped down to the bed, and then the story had been there for a whole year, so the
just
killer
slowly starved to death.
Well, yeah,
not quite to death though.
Yeah, I mean, just awful. But the point was that he was being forced to stay in one spot,
right,
and not move at all, representing Sloth. And the guy, I mean, it wasn't a like a dummy or anything. It was an actual guy. Mm-hmm. It was 96 pounds when the director cast him in that role.
Yep.
And said, you're yes, you know, and he jokingly told the guy, hey, try to lose a little bit more weight, right? Yeah. And he came back 6 pounds lighter.
Oh, shit.
He was 90 pounds when he was filmed.
Oh,
90. Man. Holy crap. And the other interesting detail was that the SWAT officers, the actors playing the SWAT officers, they weren't told that the figure on the bed was supposed to be still alive.
Nice.
And so when the victim coughs and scares the SWAT officers, that's take one. they really got them good.
Michael Reed McKay.
Yeah.
What else he's been in? He's got to be a really thin guy. Let me see.
Yeah, yeah. I looked him up when
he
I was.
He looks familiar. What do we know? Okay, he was. He played Jason 143 in X-Men 2. That's the guy that was controlling the other mutants.
Yeah, so that was a horrific one. It really surprised me. I was not expecting him to be. Now, why did you think that Brad Pitt... Oh, because initially they thought that guy... No, wait. Okay, initially they thought Victor must be the killer, but he turns out to have been another victim.
Right.
You know? Why did Detective Mills, you know... say up close to his face, you got what you deserved.
That wasn't Mills.
I thought it was. Who?
No, Mills and Mills and Somerset were at the foot of the bed. It was just a cop.
Oh, well, why did that cop say that then? Was he still convinced that?
No, remember, right before they burst in, they had a rundown on the guy and had a long rap sheet of.
Ah, right. That's
of underage girls and drug use and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a huge rap sheet. That's why the guy, you got what you deserved.
Yeah.
So, dark, gritty. This is not a happy movie at all. I mean, they added a little levity there in Mills' apartment when they're having dinner just to break the tension a little bit. Because otherwise, God, you watch this movie without that little bit of a joke there, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's just like this is the most depressing fucking movie I've ever seen.
And also, they introduce, you know, Tracy, played by Gwyneth Paltrow, as the only tiny little bit of sunshine in the entire film.
Mm-hmm.
She is the single ray of sunshine, and that's it. And of course, that ties into the ending and why it's so fucked up. Yeah.
So if you're looking for intense drama, dark, hopeless, just soul-crushing mood, you know, just like I said when we announced we were doing Seven, you know, in the last podcast, this is a soul-crushing movie.
I'm so glad.
It's so well done.
I mean, I watched it this morning. I realized, yep, I still got to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So I got up early and set my alarm. I got up early and I watched it. And the first thing I wanted to do was watch it again because there's so much.
I have watched this movie well over 30 times.
Wow. Yeah, and I bet you see new things every time. I mean, being familiar with the entire story and watching it from the beginning, that's got to be a whole different experience, you know, because you can pick up on things and
yep, watch it over and over again, and you're gonna find, you know, you're gonna see different stuff.
Let's talk a little bit about Kevin Spacey.
Oh man.
Fantastic. Fantastic. For New Line Cinema's first A-list outing, this was the first movie they did where they said, we're going to have A-list director, we're going to have A-list actors. And they got four of them, all in one movie. And Kevin Spacey was fantastic as John Doe, the serial killer. And he insisted that he not be given top billing, you know, in the promotional materials for the movie. No one knew he was in it until they saw him.
That's right.
And I thought that was brilliant. That was fantastic. That was great.
Yeah, I don't think he was in the advertising for it at all.
Not at all. He did no interviews, nothing. It was a complete secret. So it's as much a surprise, you know, seeing him in it
When he walks into the friggin' police station, covered in blood.
After this, I'm gone. No big surprise.
Detective!
You're looking for me.
Great scene. And I love how he's just so calm and collected, and he knows that he is still in control.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you can tell.
John Doe is in charge the whole fucking time. And he points it out very clearly in his monologue in the back of the car.
The only reason that I'm here right now is that I wanted to be.
No. No, we would have got you eventually.
Oh, really? So, what were you doing? Biding your time? Toying with me? Allowing 5 innocent people to die until you felt like springing your trap? Tell me, what was the indisputable evidence you were going to use on me right before I walked up to you and put my hands in the air?
John.
Well, they came close.
They came close, but if they had actually stuck out, to...
Yeah, as John Doe points out, he did break, you know, Detective Mills' face.
Calm down. I seem to remember us knocking on your door.
Oh, that's right. And I seem to remember breaking your face.
In retaliation for that. So it's not as if they had him down on the ground and or anything, you know. But I knew the ending was coming. I could say, okay, here are the power lines. There's the box. Oh, shit.
But did you know what was in the box?
It was the most logical thing. I tried not to think about it, but I was like, please don't let it be.
Yep.
Please don't let it be. But I think it's brilliant the way they don't show her for long enough in the movie that you almost forget that she was out there.
Yeah, you don't see her for like the last quarter, actually probably the last third of the movie.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, you know, they introduce her and you know she's there, and then they distract you. They do this sleight of hand where they distract you for all this build-up and this tension where it's, you know, Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt, you know, talking this duel, this cat and mouse that they're game they're playing with John Doe. And all of a sudden, you know, they say, oh, and by the way, I dropped by your place and visited your wife.
And tried to play the good husband. It didn't work out.
Oh, man, that line. I was like, oh, I know. Oh, no. And then the reaction, and I'm glad that they went the classy way and didn't try to do something stupid with a, you know.
Are you kidding me? If they tried to do it today, Somerset would have dropped the box and the head would have came rolling out of the box.
Yeah, and it would have because been like today, in 3D and an eyeball would have popped out.
And it would have been screaming. Ah! And it's just because cinema today is fucking stupid.
But this was great. I love the way his reaction. You know, I wonder what he thought about Morgan Freeman to get that kind of, oh, you know, that reaction.
I don't know.
I mean, because it looked very genuine. You know, he looked genuinely shocked. If he'd been a white guy, the color would have drained out of his face.
Maybe you know? They didn't tell him what was in the box.
I don't know. I think at that point, you know, it would have been easy enough for anyone to work out. But, yeah, and then that look is, you know, Morgan Freeman quickly works out that John Doe has complete control and he knows exactly what John Doe has planned. And that in and of itself, John Doe's plan, is brilliant. I mean, he talked these two guys, these two detectives, to go to some spot on the outskirts of the city to find the last two victims.
And lo and behold, there's a dog.
That really wasn't. That was just... I don't know what that was about.
Got something over here?
It's a miscellaneous detail.
It's a dead dog.
Maybe the dead dog was just to further distract you from, you know, from thinking about, you know, well, who, you know, what else could be going on here, you know. But the victims weren't even there yet. One victim hadn't even died yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great. That was the best thing ever. I was like, oh my gosh, this is a great movie.
It is.
Piece of art.
It really is a fantastic film. And I encourage everyone to watch it. If you haven't watched Seven, you're wrong.
Yeah, and if you haven't watched it for a while, watch it again. Watch it again. And this is definitely not a movie you can casually watch, you know, kind of munching popcorn and looking at your phone. You really have to put your goddamn phone down and
respect this fucking movie.
And lean into this movie. Be on the edge of your seat.
Because this is not a movie that you clean the house while it's in the background.
Yeah, this is not that kind of movie.
You're not going to get anything done. The dishes will remain dirty.
Yeah.
All right.
I agree. One of the best films I've ever seen.
Masterpiece of a crime drama thriller.
And I would definitely say that, I mean, normally we do supernatural horror, but I think this fits into the horror genre because of the grisliness of the murders, you know?
Yeah, so technically, like I said, it's a crime thriller.
Yeah.
But this really crosses, this is a gray area.
Mm-hmm.
This could very easily have been a horror movie.
It's a crime thriller with horror elements. Yeah, that's interesting. The only murder on screen is the one that Detective Mills commits.
Yep.
Which I find interesting.
We cannot end this without talking about Lust.
Oh, God. Wow,
Holy shit.
Do you wonder what ended up on the cutting room floor? I mean, they left that whole thing completely up to imagination, pretty much. I mean, I had to freeze frame the photo and look at it to really understand what it was I was looking at and what they were implying.
It was a strap-on dildo. But that was not a fucking dildo.
No.
That was a blade.
Yeah, it had a serrated edge blade built into it. That is fucked up.
Yeah, that was a really fucked up scene, man.
Yeah. And I love the way that they, let's see, what was his name? He was in Alien 3.
Oh, was he?
Oh, no, he wasn't. He was in Alien... what's the fourth one? I can never remember. You know, that one with resurrected clone Ripley.
Resurrection.
Yeah, Resurrection. Gosh, what was... Leland Orser, the crazed man in the massage parlor /
yep, there it is, yep.
You know, during his interview, you know, when he's being interrogated by the police in the interrogation room, he prepped for that scene by staying up for like 3 days straight.
Damn.
And in between takes, he would hyperventilate so that, you know,
he'd be out of breath.
Yeah, that he could just, you know, breathe really fast all the time through each take. He just wanted to appear to be someone who was completely freaked out to 11 on a scale of 1 to 10, you know,
by what he was forced
to do. And he was excellent. He was as good. It was as good a performance as any of the
of any performance or any part of this movie that was flawed.
Mm-mm. It's
Can
perfect.
You, really?
Yeah, it's perfect. And I'm so glad.
Maybe the dead dog.
That was a distraction.
It was a distraction. It wasn't necessary. But other than that,
mm-hmm.
I can't think of any downside to this movie.
And I'm so glad the director and the main actors stuck to their guns and said, no, we need the ending to be the way it was originally written, not some stupid, you know, studio sticking their fingers in and meddling bullshit.
Mm-hmm,
they said either keep it the way it was written or we're not doing it, because they said, you know, oh, we want to... You know, an action sequence where Mills and Somerset rescue Tracy from the killer at the end of the movie.
Nope.
You know, some bullshit like that. You know, and the actress like, no, the ending's perfect the way it is. Do it this way, or we're not doing it. Do it this way.
Unhappy ending.
Yeah,
this is the definition of the unhappy ending.
And you know, originally the only point the director budged on at all was the way it played out beat for beat at the end. It was supposed to cut to black the moment that Miller shoots John Doe. And it's supposed to last like, you know, a good five 7 seconds of, you know, just black screen and then the credits roll. But unfortunately, the way the studios were, you know, the way the theaters were rigged up at the time, the lights would come up as soon as the black happened.
Yeah.
And then people were being handed, you know, forms to fill out and say, hey, fill out how you enjoyed the movie and during test screenings and whatnot. And that really ruined the effect. So he said, okay, we've got to have a coda. We've got to have that, you know, okay, we'll take care of him. And Somerset decides to stay on because obviously his replacement has just committed murder. And
yeah,
it was also another element to the movie that was going to happen where Morgan Freeman, was looking over the country farmhouse where he was going to retire to. And he had this little bit of, he had this rose or something cut out of some silk, wallpaper that he was going to wallpaper the place with. And he kept the rose in his pocket saying, you know, this is
someday.
Something I'm looking forward to that I'm about to go to. So don't forget, you know, this is his focus. He needs to leave. And he kept it in his pocket. And that was the thing. And then at the end of the movie, he was supposed to have given his country farmhouse to Tracy and said, go out, leave this place, go have your baby out in the country, you know, leave the city. It's no good for you guys here. We'll take care of, you know, your husband, and he was going to stay on and try to make a difference. But I'm glad that they trimmed that kind of fat and that extra layers of stuff, and they just left it with the raw, perfect, pure story, and it's great as it is.
And it really was awesome.
It is awesome. I am going to watch this movie many, many times.
Do you know they wanted to make a sequel?
Yeah, I remember reading something about sequels, but I'm
there
glad.
There was going to be a sequel where Morgan Freeman's character was going to be a psychic cop.
Oh, you're kidding
and
me.
And Morgan said no.
That's just stupid. Why? Why? Why would they want to do that? I mean, I know
because
you're supposed
Hollywood
to.
Hollywood is stupid.
I know you're supposed to just throw a bunch of ideas out there and see what sticks, but I'm surprised that idea would stick enough for you to eventually read about it.
Yeah.
That's just, what? Why? No. Psychic cop, please.
Okay. 7. Go out and see it.
Yeah, go out.
Rent it and see it and
get it on Blu-ray. The Blu-ray was only a few, it was like less than $10, which is surprising considering what a great film it is. And it has loads of like special features and stuff, behind the scenes and commentary tracks and all kinds of stuff. So it's great.
All right, so what are we doing next time?
Lost Boys from 1987.